The following is a closed-circuit advisory and not necessarily for air. With a report on Amateur Radio Newsline's current finances, here's our producer, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF.
Well, the last time I was here with a financial report, I told you that I thought that I would not be asking for contributions unless the sky was falling. Well, sadly, this year the sky is falling. This is mainly because we did not get some of the larger donations that we have come to count on to keep us going over the lean summer months when people are away on vacation. Right now, we only have a couple $100 left in our bank account. Most of that will vanish as we pay off our financial obligation in regard to presenting this year's Young Ham of the Year Award and the outstanding bills, which are quickly piling up right here on my desk. And unlike the years through October 2009, when I retired from full-time employment, I'm now living on a fixed income and honestly just cannot afford to underwrite the cost of bringing these newscasts to you. To be candid, I don't like to lead off a newscast with an appeal such as this, but we have no other method of getting the word out to you that we need your financial support to keep Amateur Radio Newsline on the air, and we need it right now. To all of us involved, each donation is looked upon as an ongoing vote of confidence in the quality of the news and information that we provide to you each week. And for this, I add my personal and very sincere thank you. Please remember that Amateur Radio Newsline is a 501c3 not-for-profit corporation and that your donations are tax-deductible. The easiest way to donate is by going to our website at www.arnewsline.org and clicking on the PayPal button, or you can mail a donation to the address that you'll hear at the end of this week's report. Whichever method you choose, the all-volunteer Amateur Radio Newsline team says, thank you so much for caring. We promise to do all that we can to continue bringing you the news and information you want to hear about amateur radio and personal communications in the coming days, in the coming weeks, and the coming years. Again, thank you. I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, and now this week's newscast.
Thanks, Bill. Now, Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1890, with a release date of November 1st, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Australia's Wison stands down as the brushfire menace eases. A new satellite subband is coming to 2 meters. Congress is asked to consider mandating regularly scheduled EAS tests, and the South Sudan will be on the air in mid-November. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1890, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from near Houston, Texas, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The work of ham radio operators in the wildfire response has come to an end down under. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, has this follow-up report.
Australia's Wison has stood down from its assistance to the firefighting efforts in the Australian state of New South Wales. This, as more favourable weather conditions, has led to the containment of the blazes that raged through the Blue Mountains, threatening the outskirts of the city of Sydney. Wison had been activated by the Volunteer Rescue Association to provide manpower after a state of emergency was declared. Several of its members were sent to Lithgow as part of a Volunteer Rescue Association Team 24. The others had been held in reserve for later deployment as needed. With the worst of the emergency now over, Wison New South Wales President Compton Allen, VK2HDX, has thanked the ham radio operators who made themselves available in New South Wales' time of need. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, in Nelson, New Zealand.
In all, the wildfires destroyed some 220 homes with an estimated insurance value into the millions of dollars. More room on 2 meters for ham radio space operations is one of the outcomes of a recent IARU Region 2 meeting in Cancun, Mexico. The gathering, whose minutes have now been published, covered all Region 2 band plans for all allocations from 137 kilohertz to 250 gigahertz. Included is a new allocation for the amateur satellite service on 2 meters from 144 to 144.025 megahertz. There is also a reference to near space stations, or NSS, operations in the definitions section. This is believed to be the first mention of high-altitude balloons in any amateur radio band plan. IARU Region 2 is the organization of the International Amateur Radio Union for the American continent. You can view the entire document containing this and band plans for all other amateur radio spectrum on the web at tinyurl.com/ans300-IARU-region-2-bandplans. A bill recently introduced into the United States House of Representatives to reauthorize the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, includes a provision that would require national EAS tests at least once every 3 years. The measure is designated as H.R. 3300 and reauthorizes FEMA through fiscal year 2016 at $972 million each year. However, about $12 million of the total would provide congressional authorization for FEMA's Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, or IPAWS, which uses several technologies to simultaneously send alerts through many different channels. This includes the EAS, along with wireless alerts, internet services, and NOAA. The measure would also establish system requirements and capabilities for IPAWS and gives certain stakeholders, including federal, state, local, and private sector entities, input into its development. The Department of Homeland Security has announced a pilot project in cooperation with NPR Labs to demonstrate the delivery of the first ever real-time emergency alert messages to people who are deaf or hard of hearing in 5 Gulf states. 25 NPR affiliates in Alabama, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas have agreed to participate in the venture to transmit emergency alert messages, such as weather alerts, to 475 individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing in the station's listening areas. This to determine how effectively the messages are being sent and received. The public radio stations participating in the project will receive emergency alert messages from FEMA's Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. The stations will then broadcast the emergency alerts to specially designed FM radio data system receivers that alert the participants with a flashing indicator. The receivers can also show the content of the alert through the receiver's digital display. Participants can connect a strobe light or bed shaker alerting device to the receiver to help ensure alerts are noticed both day and night. Up front in DX, the Wake Atoll Commemorative K9WD Expedition Team has been approved for entry onto Wake Atoll and should be operational by the time many of you hear this newscast. Their equipment is already on the atoll and in safe storage, awaiting arrival of the operators that was scheduled for November 2nd local time. They will then immediately set up antennas and the stations. As we go to air, team leaders say that they plan to begin operations on November 3rd and continue until November 15th. Once again, local Wake Island time. There will be 2 CW and 2 SSB stations operational during this de-expedition. More information and updates will be on the web at wake2013.org. An international group of hams, including CQ Magazine's DX editor Wayne Mills, N7NG, is planning to operate from South Sudan as Z81X from November 14th to the 28th. This is the time period that includes the CW weekend of the 2013 CQ Worldwide DX contest. According to Mission Goodwill South Sudan spokesman Marty Lane, OH2BH, the group of 10 hams is led by International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 President Hans Timmerman, PB2T, and includes 2 local operators. The operation is hosted by South Sudan's Ministry of Posts and Telecommunications and will include a series of workshops aimed at developing a permanent amateur radio licensing and regulatory structure. On the operating side, the plan is to activate all HF bands with an emphasis on 80 and 160 meters, QSL via OH0XX, and we will have more DX news for you later on in this week's report. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KF4ADM repeater serving Williamsburg, Virginia.
Some breaking news. The Senate has confirmed Thomas Wheeler as the next chairman of the FCC and Michael P. O'Reilly to fill another vacancy at the agency. Wheeler's confirmation came after Senator Ted Cruz removed a hold on his nomination after meeting with Wheeler on Tuesday afternoon, October 29th, and Wheeler was confirmed that evening. His nomination was partnered with that of O'Reilly, a Republican, to draw bipartisan support. Their confirmations came in a unanimous vote. Skeeter?
The FCC has issued a notice of apparent liability in the amount of $15,000 to Florida resident Juan R. Nieves, Jr. This for his alleged operation of an unlicensed radio transmitter on the frequency 97.7 megahertz in the city of Summerfield. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, has the details.
According to the FCC, agents from the Enforcement Bureau's Tampa office used direction finding to locate the source of the transmissions on several occasions last May and June to an FM transmitting antenna located at a residence in Summerfield, Florida. On each of those days, the agents took field strength measurements of the station's signal and determined that it exceeded the limits for license-free operation under Part 15 of the Commission's rules. On June 25th, the agents inspected the unlicensed radio station and interviewed Juan R. Nieves, Jr. He admitted renting the residence, housing the station, owning the transmitter, and being the sole responsible party for the unlicensed operation. In fact, he claimed to have operated the station on 97.7 megahertz for over a year. He also stated that he had been in the broadcast industry for many years, was a former officer of a low-power station in Summerfield, and knew he needed a license to operate. Now, in proposing the $15,000 penalty, the FCC says that it finds that the violations in this case warranted a proposed forfeiture above the base amounts. The record evidence in this case shows that Nieves was an officer of a low-power FM station and was expected to be familiar with the commission's licensing requirements. Nevertheless, he operated the unlicensed station for over a year in deliberate disregard for the Commission's Act and the Commission's rules. As such, the FCC finds that an upward adjustment of $5,000 in the forfeiture amount is warranted. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Nieves was given the customary 30 days from the October 24th issuance date to pay the proposed $15,000 fine or to file an appeal. The FCC has fined Jared A. Brugman, the former KC0IQN of Bolivar, Missouri, $500, this for transmitting without a license in the amateur service 20-meter band. Last February, the FCC issued Brugman a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $10,000 after its agents observed an unlicensed radio transmitter operating on 14.312 megahertz from a residence in Bolivar in December 2012. Brugman was the only person at home at the time and admitted to owning the radio transmitting equipment. In his response to the notice of apparent liability, Brugman claimed that the $10,000 would be a financial hardship and requested that the FCC cancel the proposed fine. He also submitted the required financial records to back up his claim. Now, in a forfeiture order released October 23rd, the FCC has reduced the fine to $500, stating that there is a sufficient basis for such a reduction, but not to outright cancel the forfeiture. It gave him the customary 30 days from the date of issuing the forfeiture order to pay or make arrangements to pay the fine. If he fails to do so, the matter can be turned over to the Department of Justice for further enforcement action. The Emergency Volunteer Corps of Nelum Bay, Oregon, recently held a training exercise where it activated its local Map Your Neighborhood Captain's Emergency Communications Operations. This using the combined resources of citizens with FRS radios and local ham radio operators who were asked to set up a spontaneous net. According to news reports, the Map Your Neighborhood captains responded with professionalism and competency. Moreover, the operation by the hams taking part in the exercise was described as simply being great. The article in the North Coast Citizen Journal stated that everyone was proud of the community and its team of volunteers. 13 hams out of the 28 living in the area took part in the emergency preparedness exercise. DaySaver Power Systems is merging with Elk Antennas. DaySaver products will continue to be offered by Elk, which says that the transition from DaySaver Power Systems to Elk Antennas should be seamless, with no interruption in order fulfillment or warranties. Currently, the DaySaver.com website will continue to operate, but in the future, the link will likely take you to the Elk Antennas site at ElkAntennas.com for an expanded array of products with the DaySaver name. According to Elk Antennas Jim Siemens, AF6PU, the merger helps fulfill Elk's goal of expanding its products line for portable, remote, and emergency communications. Both companies service the amateur, commercial, military, and public safety radio services. Some names in the news. Back in 2011, Bob McQuarrie, ZL3TY, was awarded the first 2-meter DXCC ever issued in the Southern Hemisphere. This after he contacted and confirmed contacts with 102 countries. McQuarrie was also the first New Zealand amateur to achieve DXCC in mixed VHF 6 meters and 2 meters using digital technology combined with his CW skills and moon bounce. Now comes word that his name and call have been inducted in the New Zealand Hall of Fame. We say congratulations. Rod Hardman, VE3RHF, has been recently elected as the Radio Amateurs of Canada Director for Ontario South. His term as director will be for the 2 years starting January 1, 2014 and ending December 31, 2015. And congratulations also to Mike Callaghan, WA6KPD, who recently announced that he plans to retire on November 1st after a long and distinguished career in broadcasting. Callaghan was the chief engineer for station KIIS-FM in Los Angeles. This is a position that he has held for only a few months shy of 40 years. You can read the story of his fascinating life in broadcast engineering at tinyurl.com/Mike-Callaghan-retires. Inspiring youth will be an important part of the upcoming ARRL Midwest Convention slated for Joplin, Missouri on November 8th and 9th. And to help meet this goal, New York City educator Carol Perry, WB2MGP, will join forces with former astronaut Colonel Steve Nagel, N5RAW, to bring the magic of two-way radio and spaceflight to youngsters in a Joplin school.
He and I are going to be going together to a high school where we will be doing a presentation in front of an assembly of gifted science students and other students who will be able to ask questions of astronaut Nagel.
Then, on convention Saturday, WB2MGP will be hosting a youth forum with Steve Nagel and 5RAW taking part.
Astronaut Nagel is going to be coming to my youth forum. I am going to have a 9-year-old give a very exciting presentation, and the youth advisor, one of the youth advisors for the ARRL, will be giving a small presentation, and then we will once again be opening up for questions for astronaut Nagel from the audience, which I hope, as it does in Dayton, contain a lot of youngsters in it so that they can be inspired just by the sheer presence of this incredible human being who has been in space.
In addition to Steve Nagel and Carol Perry, there will also be a ham radio in space presentation featuring Eddie Paul, KY0F, Jeremy Widner, AC0DX, and Randy Schultz, KD0HKD. They will provide those attending their session with information on how to successfully get on the FM ham radio satellites, in most cases with equipment they already own. More on the convention and its special Ham in Space youth events are online at www.arrlmidwestconvention.com. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at arnewsline.org. and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A new repeater dedicated for use by scouts has come to the airwaves in India. Hosted by the Malabar Amateur Radio Repeater Society, the VU2MJJ system came to life on October 20th during the 2013 Scouting Jamboree on the air. The VU2MJJ repeater is located at the Malabar Club Station and reportedly has wide coverage in South India. It is also the first D-Star-capable repeater in India that can also relay other digital and analog modes, including traditional FM. VU2MJJ operates on 145.450 MHz with the standard minus offset shift. Six of this year's lectures presented at Germany's Ham Radio Gathering are now available as PowerPoint slides with synchronized audio. Available programs include Tom Pereira, W1TP's talk on the Enigma and other historic cipher machines, John Alexander, G7GCT's small cipher machines presentation, and Chris Duckling, G3SVL's 100 Years of the RSGB and its international partners. If you're interested in finding out more, go to www.dokufunk.org/talk on the World Wide Web. The European Space Agency is set to begin development of a new generation of satellites propelled by solar electric thrusters as it signs a contract with SES of Luxembourg for development of this project. This for the next phase of the Electra project. Electra is described as a partnership between European Space Agency and satellite operator SES to define, develop, and validate in space an electric-only propulsion platform for geostationary telecommunication satellites of around 3 tons. The first launch is expected by the end of 2018. NASA has used laser technology to transfer data over the 239,000 miles to and from the moon, this at a speed of 622 megabits per second. Badri Younes is NASA's Deputy Associate Administrator for Space Communications and Navigation. In a press release, he said that his agency is encouraged by the results of the demonstration of the Lunar Laser Communications Demonstration to this point. As such, NASA is confident that it is on the right path to introduce this new capability into operational service soon. The space agency's Lunar Laser Communication Demonstration is the first two-way space communication system to use a laser instead of radio. Younes calls it the first step on NASA's roadmap toward building the next generation of space communication capability. The Lunar Laser Communication Demonstration is hosted on NASA's Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer, or LADEE, satellite. The National Union of Somali Journalists says that it is shocked by the latest violent attack on the media in Puntland, which involved a double bomb strike on a private radio station in Galkayo. According to the information received from the site of the attack, gunmen hurled 2 hand bombs at Radio Dalgir at around 10 p.m. local time on Tuesday, October 15th. Eyewitnesses said that the attackers were riding in a sedan with no plate number. No one was injured in the assault. More is online at tinyurl.com/somali-broadcaster-bombed. On the air, special event station OQ4CLM is on the air through November 15th to commemorate the liberation of the town of Knokke, Holland, by Canadian troops in 1944. This is the 32nd time the station has taken to the airwaves. More information is on the web at www.oq4clm.be. Fred Weidema, PA0FAW of Arnhem, Holland, will be operating as PG200NL between November 2nd and the 29th. This in celebration of 200 years of the Netherlands. As of now, he will mainly be active on CW, but he hopes to also use SSB and some digital modes if locations become available. In his announcement, Fred notes that he is an International Shortwave League member and can be worked or listened to by ISWL members for the organization's Monitor Award. QSLs go to PA0FAW either direct, via the Bureau, or electronically using EQSL. SWL reports are obviously also very welcome. In DX, YL2GM is currently reported on the air from São Vicente Island as D44TYL. Activity has been mainly 20 and 15 meters SSB. The length of his stay is unknown. QSL via YL2GM. HB9EYP will be on the air from Zanzibar between November 2nd and the 9th, possibly using the call 5H3JJ. Activity will be QRP on 20 through 6 meters with 10 watts into a Wyndham antenna from a beachfront location. QSL via his home call sign, either direct, via the Bureau, or electronically using Logbook of the World. Members of the DX Friends Group will activate San Andres Island as 5JOR from November 1st to the 10th. Operations will be on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, and RIDI. Visit their webpage at dxfriends.com/sanandres2013 for more information, and QSL via EA5RM. DL7VOA will be active as 6V7D from Senegal between November 29th and December 7th. His operation will be mainly on CW with some SSB on 40 through 10 meters. QSL via DL7VOA. A group of operators from India will be operating from the Lakshadweep Islands from November 20th to the 10th of December as VU7AG and VU7KA. They will be active on 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and RIDI. QSL via W4VKU. Lastly, a team of 8 operators will be active from the rare Banda Besar Island between November 10th to the 15th. Call signs have not been announced yet, but operations will be on 40 through 10 meters using CW and SSB. Look for more details to be forthcoming at oc157.blogspot.co.uk. And finally this week, a story out of Minnesota that kind of speaks for itself. Here's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Call this one enforcement of a truly different kind, as in trying to make a phone call without a phone. This is a Minnesota man is being charged with public intoxication after he allegedly tried to make a phone call using a $20 bill. Iowa City police on foot patrol on the pedestrian mall recently noticed the man passed out on a bench at 2:30 a.m. on a Saturday morning. The officer said that the man smelled strongly of alcohol, had watery, bloodshot eyes, slurred speech, and poor balance. When officers requested identification, the man reportedly grabbed money from his wallet and handed it to the officers instead. Police say officers then offered him the chance to call his friends from his cell phone, but instead he placed a $20 bill to his ear and used it to try to make the call. But of course, $20 bills don't have built-in receivers or transmitters, so for the police that was enough. They placed the unidentified man under arrest for his own safety.
I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
And so ends another strange moment in communications history. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, at arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we sign off, a reminder that the Dayton Amateur Radio Association is soliciting nominations for next year's Hamvention Awards. This includes the Amateur of the Year, Special Achievement, Technical Excellence, and Club of the Year. Nominations must be received by January 17, 2014. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/hamvention-awards-2014. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, near Houston, Texas, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013. All rights reserved.